Welcome, and thank you all for standing by. At this time, I would like to remind parties that your lines are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session, at which time you may press star one to ask a question. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I will now turn the meeting over to Glenn Nowak. Thank you, sir. You may begin.
Thank you, and thank you all for being here today or for calling in today for today's briefing on the H1N1 situation in the country. Today, Dr. Thomas Frieden, director of the CDC, will be talking about where things stand with respect to influenza disease, influenza vaccine, and what we know going forward. So I will turn the podium over to Dr. Thomas Frieden, director of the CDC.
Good afternoon, everyone. We are now in a period where the vaccine availability is increasing steadily, but far too slowly. It's frustrating to all of us. We wish there were more vaccine available. We need to remember that the enemy here is a virus. Pandemic influenza is very challenging to deal with. The tools that we have available are not as modern as we would like or as rapid, and all of us can be part of an effective response. Manufacturers are working hard to get as much vaccine out safely as possible. The vaccine strains of the virus grow, and that's how we develop vaccine. Even if you yell at them, they don't grow faster. And the government, we're doing everything we can to get vaccine out as soon as it becomes available. Shipping is overnight. We're distributing to literally tens of thousands of doctors, hospitals, health centers throughout the country. The healthcare providers healthcare providers can do quite a bit with vaccinating as soon as vaccine becomes available. There is now a significant amount of vaccine available, and I'll go through that more in a minute, and also ensuring prompt treatment of people with underlying conditions or severe illness. H1N1 influenza remains overwhelmingly susceptible to Tamiflu. So people who are severely ill or who have underlying conditions and who get sick can rapidly be treated. Community groups and schools can do a lot to reduce the risk both of spread and of disruption of learning and work. And the public can do a lot by staying home when you're sick, covering your cough and sneeze, and washing your hands often. Also, if you have an underlying condition or you're severely ill with flu, see your provider right away. And of course, as vaccine becomes available, get vaccinated. Now, in terms of the virus, where are we today? We continue to have widespread activity of H1N1 influenza. 46 states are reporting widespread activity. We've had, up till now, many millions of cases of pandemic influenza in the U.S., and the numbers continue to increase. This remains largely a young person's disease, but we're seeing it increasingly affect young adults as well as children. As happens with flu each year, it generally begins in kids, and then we see it later in young adults. We are still not seeing significant numbers of cases in the elderly, and that is a characteristic of this virus, which has not changed since spring. We're not seeing any greater severity of this particular virus than we did in the spring, and it's comparable generally to that of seasonal influenza. And again, we're not seeing significant increases in resistance, nor are we seeing big changes in the genetic nature of the virus that would make it less susceptible to vaccine. We're seeing an increasing number of schools closing because of the virus, and we would just remind school administrators and others of the CDC guidance that indicates that schools should be closed when administratively it becomes very difficult or impossible for the school to continue operating, or if there are a large number of kids who have serious underlying conditions such as muscular dystrophy that would put them at greater risk for serious complications of the flu. And of course, it is a local decision whether or not to close. We provide guidance, and we've worked closely with the Education Department on that. As of now, we have seen, since the beginning of the pandemic in April and May, we've seen more than 1,000 deaths from pandemic influenza and more than 20,000 hospitalizations in this country. We expect that influenza will occur in waves, and we can't predict how high, how far, or how long the wave will go, or when the next will come. We're now in the second wave of pandemic influenza, and whether this will continue through the fall into the winter, whether it will go away and come back in the winter in traditional flu season, which would peak usually in December, January, or February, only time will tell. Various estimates are possible, and we look carefully at that. What we're committed to doing, as we've been doing from day one, is to provide all of the information that's available to us, to you, as soon as we are confident in it. What we've learned more in the last couple of weeks is that not only is the virus unpredictable, but vaccine production is much less predictable than we would wish. We're nowhere near where we thought we'd be by now. We're not near where the vaccine manufacturers predicted we would be. And we share the frustration of people who have waited online or called a number or checked the website and haven't been able to find a place to get vaccinated. As public health professionals, vaccination is our strongest tool, and not having enough of it is enormously frustrating to all of us. The enemy, again, here is the virus, and the technology that we're using, although it's tried and true, is not well suited for pandemics. Our planning anticipated a 6 to 9 month period between emergence of a new virus and availability of vaccine against that virus. The 6 month clock will be up really at the end of October, and by that time we will have some vaccine, but not as much as we would like. As you recall, we had an ethical choice a few weeks ago where we had some vaccine available, and we knew that getting out some vaccine, not enough for everyone who wants it, would be a challenging situation and would be frustrating for many. The alternative would be to let it stock up until we have enough for a larger proportion of people who wanted to get it. Doing that would have meant that it would be waiting in warehouses when people who want to get vaccinated and could be protected. As of this Wednesday, there were 14.1 million doses available to the states for ordering. 11.3 million had been shipped, so there are now more than 11 million doses in the community in various places. As of today, there are 16.1 million doses available for shipping, and if you look on a week-to-week basis, we had a big increase in the past week in the amount that had been shipped out to the community, an increase of about 5.4 million doses between last Wednesday and this Wednesday. So there is steady progress getting vaccine out. There is a lot of vaccine out there, and we've been working hard to ship it overnight, to work with states and localities so that they can hit the ground running, and to try to make it as easy as possible. One of the things that we're hearing anecdotally, a lot of the initial vaccine is in the form of the mist, of the nasal spray. This is a vaccine that is available in many places. It's only recommended for use in people who are healthy and between the ages of 2 and 49. It's available, both seasonal mist and H1N1 mist is available. This year, I received seasonal flu vaccine a couple of weeks ago using the mist. There's every reason to believe it will be as effective as the shot. It's one less needle, so kids may like that. And there is no risk to healthcare workers if they get the mist for their patients. There are some misconceptions about this. It's a weakened virus that's been adapted in the laboratory not to grow at the usual human temperature, so it's something that is not a risk to your patients if you, as a healthcare worker, get this vaccine. On the flip side of the frustration is the fact that there's a lot of interest in this vaccine, and we're glad to see that. We wish it didn't take so long to produce, and there have been efforts going back many years to develop more rapid methods of producing vaccine. More than $2 billion has been spent by the Department of Health and Human Services trying to develop newer methods of vaccine production. This is a high priority, but it's not easy, and we will not go out with a new vaccine until we're completely confident of its safety. So even if we had a new vaccine now, I'm not sure we would use it in the midst of a pandemic which has a similar level of severity to seasonal flu. In the coming weeks, we will see a steady increase in the amount of vaccine available. As that happens, we are hoping to see that continued strong interest in getting vaccinated. Vaccine is our best protection against the flu, and as supply increases, we need to be ready on the part of healthcare workers, on the part of the public health departments throughout the country, and on the part of people who want to get vaccinated to find the vaccine and get it. I want to say a few words about seasonal flu vaccine. More than 85 million doses have been distributed, and just to remind you, seasonal flu vaccine is distributed by the manufacturers. It does not go through the public system. We provide about 10% of the overall seasonal vaccine, so we don't have as much awareness of where it is and where the shortages are. We heard a number of reports of shortages in seasonal flu vaccine availability. These were surprising to us until we got back earlier this week. New data about the uptake of seasonal flu vaccination, which has been unprecedented. By our estimates, over 60 million people have already been vaccinated for seasonal influenza. That is way more, way sooner than in any prior year. And that's strong uptake, and we hope that that trend continues. Before taking questions, I would just summarize that flu brings significant challenges and pandemic influenza even more serious and challenging issues, that the vaccine technology we have today is not well suited to making a vaccine in time for the first wave or even early into the second wave of the pandemic. The vaccine is arriving too late for many, but still when we have lots of disease around. So 16 million doses isn't what we would have wanted by this time. It isn't what had been predicted by this time, but it's also a significant number, and we hope to see vaccine doses that are available used promptly. In the next few weeks, we do anticipate that we will have significantly more vaccine available, and we recognize that this is very challenging for state and local health departments, which have to allocate the vaccine and try to do that equitably, but also reach the highest risk populations and the populations that for which it will do the most benefit. So thank you all for your interest, and we'll be happy to take some questions. We'll start in the room.
Thanks. Mike Stobie from the AP. Doctor, a couple of questions. First, you just said the vaccine is coming too late for many. Do you mean it's coming too late, they'd rather it be here sooner, or do you mean as a medical issue, it's coming too late to benefit them?
If people have already had H1N1 influenza, then the vaccine is not going to help. On the other hand, many people who think they've had H1N1 influenza have had a cold or another virus, not H1N1. So we do recommend that everyone get the H1N1 vaccination if they're in a priority group when it becomes available.
And my follow-up, I'm sorry, who has been getting the shot? Do you have any information of the doses that have been out there already? Is it mainly healthcare workers, who's been getting it?
We have very preliminary information on who's getting vaccination, and most have been children. So large numbers of children have been vaccinated, and by next week at this time, we'll have a bit more information on at least the age groups of the different groups getting vaccinated.
Hi, thank you. Diana Davis from WSB in Atlanta. Do you have any information on the percentage of vaccine in the pipeline or that is being shipped out as we speak, injectable versus the nasal spray?
It has been about half and half. Now more than half is the injectable, but a significant proportion is the nasal spray. And frankly, in past years, nasal spray has gone unused. So we think it's an effective vaccine. It's particularly useful for healthcare workers and for children healthy between the ages of 2 and 49. Shall we go to the phone? Let's take the first question from the phone, and then we'll come back to the room.
First question is from Miriam Falco, CNN Medical News. Your line is open.
Thanks for taking questions. I know you've discussed this before, but if you wouldn't mind discussing it again. First of all, can you tell us how many pregnant women have died, and can you tell us why it's so important that pregnant women get the flu shot? We're hearing that women who are looking for thimerosal-free injectable vaccine are having trouble finding it. Do you have any information on that, too?
Pregnancy is a risk factor for influenza each year, and it's also a risk factor for serious illness and death from H1N1 influenza. About 6 times more likely to die from H1N1 influenza if you're pregnant. So women who are pregnant are a high priority for the vaccine. There is no evidence that thimerosal increases the risk of problems, but we would like to have thimerosal-free vaccine for people who want it. The challenge is that thimerosal is used for the multi-dose vials. And multi-dose, you may have more of that product, so finding thimerosal-free vaccine for those who want it may be a challenge. Next question.
From the phone.
From the phone.
The next is from Helen Branswell, Canadian Press. Your line is open.
Thanks very much. In terms of the slowness of the production process at this point, I know that vaccine manufacturers have had problems with yield, but I was noticing today that the European Medicines Agency is suggesting that people use 2 doses, even in adults, and I'm wondering if you're having any indication whether that's having an impact on how quickly the United States can get vaccine from suppliers in Europe.
I didn't hear your question. You said that the indications that are using something about doses. What did you say exactly?
I'm sorry. The European Medicines Agency, the EMEA, today said that it's sticking with a 2-dose regime for adults with H1N1 vaccine, and I'm wondering if that is going to have a knock-on effect on the American supply, whether that's going, if countries in Europe are using 2 doses for each person, whether you're anticipating that means your supplies from Europe will be later than currently anticipated.
The data that we've seen is very encouraging for a single dose for everyone 10 and above, so I would think that that would be the general recommendation. Our supplies are already pre-ordered, and it's a question of when they actually get delivered. So I don't think that would be a consideration. Are there other questions in the room before we go back to the phone?
If young children get their first vaccine in one form, let's say a shot, and the 3 to 4 weeks later they can't get a shot, they can get an injectable, can they mix the two types?
We think that's probably going to be fine. Back to the phone.
The next question is from Elizabeth Weiss. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I'm wondering, when do you think that we'll have robust supplies of vaccine available such that you can just, you know, be looking for it in your local Walgreens and pretty much everyone who wants one will be able to get it?
Well, we've had difficulties with the projections that we've had so far. What we can say now is that certainly there are 16.1 million doses available for ordering, that there are more than 11 million doses already in the community, and that the numbers will continue to increase. We think supply will become much more widespread within the next several weeks, but giving an exact date, given the how far off some of the projections have been from what we have now, I would prefer to just take it one day at a time, 1 week at a time. What we're committed to doing is everything we can to get the vaccine out as soon as it becomes available, to work with states and localities to get it used as soon as it's out, and to make the information available for people so that within the limitations of supply, we can make it as convenient and accessible to people as possible.
Mike from AP. Could you put this into context, 46 states widespread? Is this as much illness we see from flu as we ever do at the height of any season? And then my second question was, you talked about the seasonal vaccine availability and 60 million doses already out there. It's supposed to be 114 million at the end of the season. Is 114 million going to be enough, do you think?
46 states having widespread transmission is the peak of flu season. To be basically in the peak of flu season in October is extremely unusual. It is, though, a very different pattern. And the fact that we're having a young person's flu now doesn't mean we're not going to have an old person's flu or older person's flu later on in the year. So it's good that the seasonal flu vaccine is out. There are 85 million doses out already, of which at least 60 million appear to have been used already. Another 30 million will be coming in the coming months. And we have never used all of the seasonal flu vaccine. So manufacturers have always been frustrated that they produce it, and then they have from a few to tens of millions of doses unused in past years. So the fact that we have high uptake is very encouraging. With the technology we have now, we can't turn on a dime and make more flu vaccine available as the utilization goes up. So we hope there will be enough seasonal flu vaccine for everyone who wants to have it. We're confident that there will be eventually enough H1N1 vaccine for everyone who wants to be vaccinated, but probably or certainly not for everyone as soon as they'd like to be vaccinated. On the phone?
The next is from Maggie Fox from Reuters. Your line is open.
Dr. Frieden, I was just intrigued by something you said about if there was a new vaccine available now, I'm not sure we use it unless there was a pandemic with similar severity to seasonal flu. I'm sorry, can you tell us a little bit more about what you mean there?
I said it a little differently. It's a very hypothetical comment, but basically, if we had a new vaccine technology, we might not want to roll it out in a pandemic. We're using a tried-and-true technology. If we had a new technology and we had a strain of pandemic influenza that not only was widespread but was causing severe illness in a larger proportion of people than seasonal flu, which H1N1 is not so far, then we might want to use a newer vaccine technology because the risk to benefit ratio would be different. So the point was simply that we don't have a new technology. We're using a tried and true technology. We need to try to find new technologies, and ultimately we'd like those to be used for the seasonal flu vaccine each year. On the phone?
The next is from Donald McNeil, New York Times. Your line is open.
Hi, Dr. Frieden. So we're still getting calls from women who complain that their pediatricians are against giving the swine flu shot to the H1N1 flu shot to their kids, or OBGYNs who are against giving it to them as pregnant women because they mistrust the shot. What do you, as head of the CDC, say to those women, and what do you say to the doctors?
I can understand the hesitancy and reluctance to take a vaccine that appears to be new and different. All we can do is provide the facts. The facts are that this is the same manufacturing process. It's the same manufacturers. It's the same factories, the same safeguards as the seasonal flu vaccine that has been used for more than 100 million doses each year for many years, and which has an excellent safety record. If we had had this pandemic earlier, we would most likely have included H1N1 influenza as part of the regular seasonal flu vaccine. So there's every reason to be confident in the safety of seasonal flu vaccination, and there's no reason to think that the H1N1 vaccine would be any less safe. Next question from the phone.
The next is from Tom Mao, LA Times. Your line is open.
Can you please expand on this information that came out yesterday that one out of every five kids had the swine flu during the first couple weeks of October?
I'm glad you asked me that because I think maybe it got a bit misinterpreted. The data was simply that one in five kids had some sort of a flu-like illness according to a telephone survey. That is very different from saying that they had H1N1 influenza, and a much smaller proportion, and we don't know how much smaller, would have had H1N1 influenza. We have seen in certain communities with lots of H1 influenza that the peak attack rate can be as high as 1 in 5 in children at the peak of the activity, but I don't think that's what those data show. Those data simply show that kids get a lot of infections, and that's another reason to cover your cough, cover your sneeze, and wash your hands. Next question from the phone.
Jonathan Seri, Fox News. Your line is open.
Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Frieden. During the initial weeks of the H1N1 vaccine and certainly during the testing, no significant side effects were found beyond the occasional sore arm you'd expect with the seasonal flu vaccine. Just wanted to confirm that that's still the case, and if you could elaborate on what's being done to track the long-term safety of the vaccine.
Thank you. Vaccine safety is something we take extremely seriously. We have several different tracking systems in place to monitor any potential adverse effect or side effect from the vaccination. We also have specific programs to look at women who've had influenza and have gotten treated with medications or not to see if there are any long-term problems. One of the things that we're looking at very closely is the risk of Guillain-Barré syndrome. And some background information is very important for people to understand. Guillain-Barré syndrome is a rare but serious condition that's generally self-limited. It can, in exceptional cases, be severe or even fatal. So it's something we take very seriously. Guillain-Barré syndrome occurs as part of the normal course of events, even when there's no vaccination going on, at a rate of about 20 people per day, every day of the year in the U.S., with a little more, actually, in the winter months, I believe. And that is one of the reasons why we need to anticipate that there will be some people who get vaccinated and develop Guillain-Barré syndrome. Many of them, or perhaps all of them, would have developed Guillain-Barré syndrome even without vaccination. So we look at all of the reports. We encourage people to report. We assess every report. And ultimately, it's a question of looking at the numbers and seeing, do the numbers that we're seeing, are they higher than the numbers that would have happened by chance or if there had been no vaccination program? We have time for one or two more questions. Are there any more questions in the room?
As the winter starts and we get into what's usually the traditional seasonal flu season, is it going to matter for clinicians to know whether they're dealing with H1N1 or seasonal flu? A physician asked me that the other day.
What we do is track on a community-by-community basis what strains are spreading. So for an individual clinician, it's not necessary to send samples for testing to determine what type. We have monitoring systems in place throughout the country so we can see if it remains H1N1, and it's overwhelmingly H1N1 now. And as the winter progresses, that may change. But the bottom line doesn't really change, that the most important thing to do is to, if you've got the flu, most people aren't going to need testing, aren't going to need treatment. If you do have an underlying condition or if you are severely ill with difficulty breathing, important to get care promptly and vaccination as soon as that becomes available. Last question from the phone.
The last question is Pat Wexler, Bloomberg. Your line is open.
Good afternoon. I was calling because Bloomberg today reported that U.S. officials only heard last week that at least three suppliers would be having significant shortfalls and that the reason for this was manufacturing problems. We also heard that you're not going to be able to make the 195 million dose level that you had suggested for the end of the year. You know, I'm curious as to which companies are having these manufacturing problems, and also what are the manufacturing problems, and have they actually been remedied at this point?
What we're seeing are manufacturing delays. This is not unusual for influenza. Often in influenza season, it's a chicken and egg process, and it doesn't move as quickly or as efficiently as we'd like, and it's not as predictable as we would like. As it happens, the flu mist has been growing well, so the virus that has been growing to make the flu mist has grown well, and we've seen a steady supply of the nasal mist. Each different supplier has its own challenges. But we have to recognize, again, that the enemy here is the virus and the vaccine technology that we have that's antiquated, but tried and true. We have confidence in its safety, and we have confidence that ultimately there will be enough vaccine for everyone who wants to get vaccinated to get vaccinated. Thank you all very much.